The sense of entrepreneurship is still very much alive here, regardless of the size of the brand.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener.
Hi, this is Kate Durge, and today on The Safari, I am speaking with co-founder, creative director, Kevin McLaughlin, and CEO, Mary Ellen Coyne, the dynamic duo who leads the iconic lifestyle brand, J. McLaughlin. We talk about infusing joy into everything they do, the importance of celebrating local communities, and staying fresh but familiar for their loyal customers while they continue to grow. It was an absolute thrill to talk to these two powerhouses, and I hope you enjoy. Hi, welcome to The Safari. I am so thrilled today to have two of my most favorites at my most favorite brand, co-founder and creative director, Kevin McLaughlin, and CEO, Mary Ellen Coyne of the famous J. McLaughlin brand. Welcome, the two of you.
Thanks. Thank you, Kate. We're thrilled to be here.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to have you both. And I have to say, I think this is my first podcast conversation with two, and I'm so honored to have the two powerhouses in front of me. So let's get going here. I want to say just a quick note because Kevin McLaughlin has been a very dear friend for a very long time. And this goes back to the days of our sons being toddlers together and has been an incredible ride over the last 20 years to watch not only our sons grow up, but the evolution of the J. McLaughlin brand. And I feel like I've seen it over the 20 years, but really it's been 46 years, which is unbelievable. So Kevin, I want to start at the beginning because what you have created in 46 years since 1977 on the Upper East Side of Manhattan is remarkable. So with that, can you start from the beginning, Upper East Side, New York City?
Yeah, I was working in a men's clothing shop down on Wall Street, and then switched jobs to one on the Upper East Side, a store that's no longer in business. But it was a prep shop, and it was a new world to me. I didn't realize quite the affluence and the demand. And my brother Jay and I had another business going on at the same time. We were renovating brownstones in Brooklyn. And it was really at the advent of that whole renaissance, that urban renaissance that happened in Brooklyn. And we happened to be there, and we were doing rather well, just buy a house, fix it up a little bit and sell it. And we were doing it ourselves. I was still working part time in the store. And I said to Jay, after a few months working on the Upper East Side, I said, we got to try this. We got to give this a go. And, I would attribute it to the arrogance or the ignorance of youth that we thought we could do it. And so we gave it a try, and the chips fell in place. We found a spot. We actually built that first store ourselves, just he and I and one other fellow. And the timing was right. It was Annie Hall was the movie of the year, et cetera. The mood was very much in our favor. Things aligned very nicely. The energy on the Upper East Side was tremendous at that time, and we were in the right place at the right time, and we just kept building on that.
It's incredible. And so, Kevin, just to confirm, you started with menswear, and what did that look like? And for how many years did you stay in that sort of that market, that space?
Well, we did have a smattering of women's to start. But my background was men, so that was where the emphasis was. But it was pretty, we were quick to realize that the appetite was greater on the women's side. They bought more frequently. They were less sensitive to price. It was just a quicker turn and more excitement. And so the energy, the dollars, the real estate, everything went to the highest ROI, and that was women's web.
And I don't want to fast forward too quickly. I want to obviously get to the powerhouse on your left there, Mary Ellen, and when she joined the business and how it's grown. But just give me a little bit background in terms of that first store, and then you evolved. How quickly did you evolve into sort of rolling the additional stores out?
Well, strangely, the timing was so fantastic. I knew where I wanted to be, as little as I really knew about the Upper East Side. I knew that Mellon's was the place to go, and I wanted to be as close to Mellon's as I could be. So we found a shop, and that's a whole nother story, which I won't go into now, but it was two doors away. It now is Mezzaluna, which was a restaurant that I also started originally, but with a partner there. But we were very, very busy right from the day one. We stayed open until 10 o'clock at night. Literally on a Saturday, we would have someone work the door because you couldn't let people in until someone left. It was so crowded. So it was a very exciting time. And Jay was living in Brooklyn. He was married at the time, living in one of the brownstones. And he immediately didn't care for the commute, and he started hunting around, and he went up to Carnegie Hill, which was the sort of most residential, bucolic, if there is such a thing in New York, neighborhood on the Upper East Side. And he wrote letters to everybody who owned a building up there, any single owner, and a lady called him up, and long story short, he bought the building. And so that was our second store. We went up to Carnegie Hill and opened there, and from there, we went to Westport because Jay was a lifeguard in Westport. And we could sense that at the YMCA, he was a lifeguard there in college. And we could sense that a lot of people were moving to the burbs. So that was third. And it just kept going. It was intuition, is really what drives so many of the decisions and the whole process. But one foot in front of the other.
You know? Well, intuition. And you also talk about thinking small and thinking locally. And maybe this is where I'm going to turn it over to Mary Ellen, because 175 doors later, here we are, Mary Ellen. And I want to talk about sort of the choices that you make as a company in identifying the right communities to open these stores in different locations, because I think that has been so much of the brand's success. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So, you know, as you know, Kate, and you just said, so much of this brand it all begins with intuition, right? So, and it begins, honestly, our real estate strategy begins with a very informal conversations we've had lately, articles we've read recently, just, you know, a sense of what's happening and where people are gravitating toward. Of course, we have a demographer who then comes back to us and really gives us all the data, so we understand the data points before we make a decision. So it really is that balance of art and science. And we, from the very beginning, you know, one of the brand philosophies has been to really immerse ourselves in the communities where we have stores, really ingratiate ourselves, join the Chamber of Commerce, be the head of the town committee, organize events for the other stores in town. It's a very, the philosophy is one that has worked from day one and continues to work. As you know, we just opened our most recent opening was in Garden City, and we had the opening event earlier this week. And it's just so refreshing to see how the community comes out, because we are there for the community. And that is always the relationship. It's been that way from the first store until till the last.
Yeah, I think that is what's such a beautiful thing about this brand. And I speak, you know, from my own personal experiences. I love going to the places where, you know, we vacation, or, you know, friends, I go visit friends. So living in Long Island in Locust Valley, our store, J. McLaughlin store right there in, you know, Main Street in Locust Valley feels like it's our own. So it doesn't feel like this store I'm going to find anywhere else. But yet when I go to the J. McLaughlin down in Boca Grande, Florida, it feels so true to Boca Grande. And I guess, you know, what I would love to know is how do you maintain that continuity of a brand, right? Because you have the same product, but you're localizing it so it feels really true to the community. Because other brands are not doing that. So it's a true specialty of yours.
Well, the sense of entrepreneurship is still very much alive here, regardless of the size of the brand. And what, you know, when every location is selected, we work with an architect, Doug Larson. He has worked on every single one of our stores. He's incredibly talented, and he really takes the time to study the community, to study the history, to study the architecture. And really, so I think it starts with we're building stores that immediately feel as though they are appropriate for that location.
Yeah. I mean, the way I like to phrase it sometimes is no two J. McLaughlin stores are alike, but you always know it when you're in a J. McLaughlin store. You know, so that becomes a trick. And being part of the community, I think most people share your sentiment, Kate. They like to think of it as their store.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, everybody seems to be very happy for our success. When they realize how big we've gotten, I think we at least appear humble enough that people are happy for that success.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
From a customer perspective, I would wholeheartedly agree with that statement. And I think, Marilyn, you've talked before in past interviews about this three-pronged approach. As you continue to grow, you know, for store openings, you're really identifying those key markets. Can you tell me a little bit more about that three-pronged approach?
We're super excited as we think about the future. And So first and foremost, we are most heavily concentrated on the East Coast. And while we have stores that are, you know, throughout the country and the West Coast, we truly believe that in the middle of the country, we have room to fill in where there really are underserved markets looking for high quality retail. So that is part of it. The other thing that we're finding as a silver lining to the pandemic is this population diversity. So people are spending more time in other locations than they had previously. And, you know, the example we love to give here is the store that we opened in Southold out on the North Fork of Long Island. Southold is historically a very sleepy town. Potato fields is what they were, you know, known for years. But during the pandemic, Southold started to boom with people that were leaving the city, and the store is absolutely charming, fits right in on the main street. And the store, you know, will do 2.5 times what we originally thought it would do. Like just the success stories about that are, it's really incredible. And then I would say we have an opportunity in classification stores. We've just opened our first store, men's only store in Palm Beach, which mm-hmm. we're very excited about. Because as you know, and you sort of alluded to it at the beginning, men's was very important to the launch of this brand. And over time, as women's became more and more successful, we pulled back ourselves mm-hmm. on giving men's real estate, on giving men's resources, on giving men's inventory. So we're really leaning in to men's. It will be the number one growth vehicle we have over the next 12 to 24 months. And stores is certainly a big part of that.
Fantastic. Okay. So we've talked about your freestanding stores and your growth and your continued expansion. But let's talk about e-com because you have a big e-com business as well. So what's your percentage currently for freestanding and then your e-com business direct to consumer?
We do roughly 25% of our sales online.
Okay.
And we're very excited. We just replatformed. We are now on Shopify Plus. So the user experience just being that much simpler, faster, we're thrilled with the capabilities that will add to the ones that we already had. We e-commerce is a growing business for us exponentially. You know, as in the terms of growth rate, it's growing faster than stores. But importantly, we believe that e-commerce will always be the smaller part of the business. The stores are the magic at J. McLaughlin. Our teams are incredible. People, our environments are incredible. People love to come in and really spend time in the stores with the associates. So as we've done all, as we've invested in the replatform, we believe 25 could go up to 30, slightly over 30, particularly with men's in the mix, because men's is historically a stronger e-commerce line. But we love that the vast majority of our business is today and will be done in the future in our stores.
And again, going back to what you talked about earlier, is the way that you activate the stores on such a local level really does engage the consumer and probably wants them to come back. Because I know you've talked about in the past, your loyal customer is a repeat customer. So, she comes back time and time again. And listen, I speak from, again, my personal experience. My husband's, they rarely wear another shirt other than J. McLaughlin. It's like they have found that shirt and they just keep coming back. And same thing with the sweaters, the pants. But I think what you do in terms of engaging your local communities is so important. And I know you give back in a big way.
And it is a big challenge bringing it back to the e-commerce business, how to duplicate that in-store experience. Yes. Or at least get a part of that energy and that ambiance that we're able to create in the shop online. It is constantly a challenge, and we constantly look for ways to personalize things to make that online customer also feel special.
I think that's so important, Kevin. And I think about your own personal collections that you have and how you infuse those in the stores, and having that same feeling online is interesting. And I just want to note to our listeners, because Kevin is jack of all trades, many trades, and he is also a collector. So hearing his stories over the years of the rattan collections that he has and selecting certain items to fit into the different stores, it's amazing what you've done. What would you say is one of your favorite collections, and how do you choose which store to put those items into?
Well, there'll be a particular painter that I like, or a certain style. I happen to be very fond of and doing a lot of searching for Florida art that was over the years, spending more time there, or Caribbean art. As you know, Kate, Barbara loves lemon. So I've been looking at lemon paintings. Her new fixation seems to be parrots. I'm not exactly certain why, but she found a ceramic parrot in the garden of our house in Boca Grande, and she became fascinated with it and learned that it was a roof tile, so these things evolve based on, it's nice to be passionate about something that is of no consequence. We need a bit of that in life.
We do. We definitely do. Well, you infuse such joy, I would say. And I love using that word, but truly J. McLaughlin brings joy to people's lives. And I think your collections bring joy to the J. McLaughlin brand. And I love Barbara's lemons and now her parrots. but I want to ask you both, you have stayed so true to the J. McLaughlin classic style and the DNA, but how do you incorporate new trends appealing to a wider audience?
It is a very interesting line. I use a phrase often that it is our responsibility to take a woman of a certain lifestyle, of a certain point of view, as close to fashion as she wants to go without ever taking her over the edge. She wants to feel modern. She wants to feel contemporary and appropriately dressed, but she doesn't want her clothing to scream. As I like to say, she doesn't want her clothing to arrive before she does. Her personality is more important, and it should be complementary. So I think Mary Ellen and I and Glennis, who's the merchant involved, have a constant self-imposed discipline among us to try and feel new and feel fresh, but still be very familiar. That phrase, fresh but familiar, is one that I often use too. It needs to be fresh enough that our customer will come in and buy it again, because she owns a lot of dresses in her closet now. Yet it has to be familiar enough. We cannot go too far over the edge. We can't take her to a place that she's uncomfortable in. Also, you know, your opinion on this, Mary Ellen, but it's a battle to get that right. Because sometimes if we go too far, it's not helpful. You know?
Yeah, I would say we sit in a very covetable position in the world of, you know, of women's fashion, in that, number one, our core customer is incredibly loyal. We take a tremendous amount of their closet space, and they trust us. So that helps on several fronts. One is they love the core basics, and we know that that's a business that we can continue to grow, and there's incredible stability to that. But as Kevin and the team are thinking about new and interesting things that are happening in the world of fashion, because our customer trusts us, they're willing to take a chance. If we said we believe in it, and we do, you know, to Kevin's point, we don't do anything crazy, right? We're never ahead of the trend, but we're relevant, right? We nod to what's happening in the world, and in a way that our customer feels that they can carry it off, and they feel that it's appropriate because they trust that what we've put in the store previously is something that always worked for them.
Yes, and that loyalty and that consistency is key.
It is. And Kate, you know, we've talked about this a little in the past, you know, and I have to say, after 46, almost 47 years in business, this is a brand that has incredible metrics, and the business all comes from those relationships. Because people trust us, we have a very high retention rate. We have very high LTV. We run a full price business. People come in and they want to shop new collections. They don't want to wait for anything to be promotional. We're very fortunate that to have all of these industry leading statistics, and it's all because of the relationships we've built with our customers.
Absolutely. And again,
I often, you know, just to add to it, the model of the company from day one has always been make a customer, not a sale. That has always been the philosophy. Make a customer, not a sale. Taking that long view is what has got us to where we are, honestly.
Yeah. And I think, Kevin, I'm going to speak to what you have told me in the past. And I love this, because the way that you connect with your customer goes back to this loyalty. And you once told me you learn a lot about someone when you look at their bumper sticker. And in terms of the stickers they have on their cars, right? Where do they go to school? How many kids do they have if they put those stickers with like the two adults and the five kids? But how it goes back to your intuition, and you're very intuitive, and you're very aware of your customer and your potential customer. So I think that, from my perspective, again, has been so much of your growth strategy and also your success.
Well, you tell a story, I mean, about when you came here and, you know, what made this different from your other experiences in business. And I think it sums it up. It always does.
So when I was first approached, I had, my first reaction was, I know that brand, also from Locust Valley, Kate, where my dad shopped frequently. But I hadn't been in a store in years, and I thought, I just don't think about them. That wasn't positive or negative. I don't think about it. I decided when this opportunity came along, to visit stores, and I visited 22 stores before I met Kevin. And I was fascinated and felt compelled to keep going, because every store experience was unbelievable. It was unlike any other store I had ever been in. And the conversation was so easy. And again, I wasn't buying in 22 stores, but making connections with people, to, you know, understanding who knew whom, it was eye-opening to me. And someone, you know, I was told at the very beginning, the store team's amazing, you'll see. And I thought, well, they can't all be amazing, but they are all amazing. And, you know, huge credit to Deirdre, who runs our store team, for really, as we've expanded, maintaining that culture and having customer service be of the highest priority. I mean, we could tell you crazy stories about what our teams do for their clients, in the best way, years of relationships. And so that was really that was really what drew me in. And I took the meeting with Kevin, and then of course immediately thought that this would be a perfect spot.
Yeah. And I was thinking also, Mary Ellen, when you first time you came into merchandising meetings and design meetings and, you know, a kickoff for a season, that it was different than anything you had ever experienced before.
Yes.
Because of the customer-centric nature of things here.
Yeah. So, I always say, having worked for some very big names in the industry, you very easily fall into the trap of making one person happy. And what we do here every day is we think about our customers and we think about just how to make their life a little bit easier. If you can, if you can wake up in the morning and know that you have a dress, that one piece that you are going to throw on, grab your shoes and feel confident that day, look great that day, like that's what we're here to do. We're here to make people happy. We're here to make them feel confident, which allows for us to have a very very nice time. We love what we do here.
Well, it shows. And you're right, Marilyn. You go into any door and you get that same experience and the follow-up. I mean, I've had experiences where I've got the salespeople texting me, something just came in, we'll send it to you. I mean, it really is the customer service, but it goes back to the culture. And Kevin, I have seen your headquarters and where you are in Greenport? Yes. Greenpoint, where you have been since, what was the year that you moved out to Greenpoint?
25 years ago now. So we can do the math here. It was like 98 or something that we came here. Yeah. Yeah.
And you were one of the first.
We're very trendy. Yeah. We're blind luck. Trust me. It was just good fortune. But it's a really nice place to work. Yes.
It's incredible. Now, I think the two of you are so dynamic and such a strong duo together. But what are some of the most significant challenges you've faced together as business partners and how have you overcome them?
Well, I don't think it's particularly challenging, to be very honest with you, Kate. There's a mutual respect. So I think just permeates the conversation. So even on a difference of opinion, it's respectful, and we'll find our way to a conclusion, is my sense.
Yes. And I would say Kevin and I have incredibly complementary skill sets. Right. And at the same time, I will say very much the same taste level. We are always voting the same way, which is a great place to be, and doing two very different things with it, but we're always on the same page.
Yeah, it's a good fit.
Yeah, and it's a good place to be. But I will ask, so whose decision was it to do the first ever brand refresh just recently?
Well, that was a conversation that came. It's probably started with me complaining to Mary Ellen, and she got here, that I was always disappointed in the brand recognition for all of the hard work at times. And I would tell her the stories of, people when I would meet them at a party or something. Oh, yeah, I know that shop. You have one on the Upper East Side, and like one in the Hamptons. And that would, and then eventually the conversation would turn to, well, how many do you have? And I'd say 165. And they go, what? And so I was constantly presenting Mary Ellen with that challenge, because frankly, the challenge has defeated me. Mm-hmm. I have not figured out how to get that message out. And so I was, dumping it on her, for lack of a better term, to try and help with this. And so she was happy to tackle it and to, look into that. And I think that's what led to the refresh.
Yes. Yes.
And it's been a great refresh, but it also, Kevin, you talked about sort of it goes back in time, because while it's a refresh, it's staying true to your heritage and to your DNA.
And it's given us, for me, its biggest value is in thinking more about the branding. I pretty much have my head down worrying about product, worrying about some of the mechanics of running a business and the customer. But the branding marketing aspect was something that I was not particularly attuned to. So it's helped change my perspective on things.
Yeah. And in terms of future with the new branding? And this is really the logo and the digital presence. But Marilyn, talk to us about the future and sort of growth strategy for where you hope to go or where you are going.
Yeah, we're so excited because we believe there is so much growth ahead of us. So, you know, as we mentioned, men's will be a focus for us in the short term, and we believe that will be a significant business. We are also leaning into athleisure as a category, having some conversations now about pickleball, which we're super excited about. Yeah. And footwear is a growth category for us. So we, you know, our line has been incredibly well received, and we see tremendous growth there. In addition to that, you know, we are doing trunk shows in the month of April in London and Lisbon, and we're very excited to test the waters there and see what some level of international presence looks like. And then on the long horizon, when we think, you know, 3 to 5 years out, we're very interested in looking into home as a business.
Yeah, which makes sense. And I'm sure you have customers coming in because they feel like the J. McLaughlin stores are their home or an extension of their home, because certainly they're so comfortable. And
yes. And again, Kate, the beauty of this brand with customers as loyal as we have, and as passionate about the brand as they are, they are often the source of the next initiative, right? So it is our customers coming in, to your point. You know, they've asked us before when they were trying on dresses, could we carry shoes that mm-hmm. would go with the dress? And now very often, you know, Kevin, I'm sure you know, personally selects and buys all of the furniture. And very often people say, where can I get that? Can you tell me, will you sell that piece to me? So it's great because it generally comes from our own clients in the stores asking for what's next. That really helps us build the business plan.
And that's interesting, Mary Ellen. Do you also have your clients or customers coming in and saying, why aren't you in XYZ location? Or because they're travelers, right? So they're the same customer you have in Nantucket is going to, I don't know, Darien, or they're going down to Naples, Florida, and maybe they go out to Sun Valley, where you also have a store. But
yes, very, very often this starting point for a new location is a conversation with someone in a store or someone at a social event. And we're always asking our store teams and their clients. It's the best way to really get some of these ideas for new locations.
Yeah. And that again goes back to your success of just staying in lockstep with your customer and that loyalty that you have gained because of those conversations.
Agreed. Right. Agreed. Again, covetable place to be.
Yeah, it is. It is. Growth strategy, going back to in 2015, you were acquired by Brentwood Associates. What changed? But, you know, during this 9-year period, and I know you were at 100 doors, I think, at that time, and this is what propelled the growth to 175, if I'm correct.
We were just under 100 when I joined. I joined in 2016, and since then, the brand has just experienced tremendous growth, you know, doubling our sales, tripling our profits, opening a lot of stores, replatforming every functional area. So we are really now ahead of the technology.
Yep.
And
yeah, I would say, in a nutshell, Brentwood's biggest contribution was hiring Mary Ellen.
Yes. Well, clearly with the growth and the success and where you are and the dynamic duo of the two of you, you know, it has been a pleasure and an honor to watch the growth of this brand. And I know this brand just will continue to grow and turning up the volume. You know, Kevin, to your point, is that I don't think I go anywhere now and people don't know the J. McLaughlin brand name.
We're making progress. I agree.
Yes. Yes. But for those of us who are lovers of the brand, I think we still feel it's sort of a well-kept secret because it still does feel like our brand. Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I'm so grateful for the time that we've had here. Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to tell our listeners?
Well, I would say to the listeners, presuming there are customers there, that we are grateful. Thank you. You know, I mean, honestly, it's a pleasure, this business, and our customers make it that way. So for those listening, I say thank you very much.
For those listening who are not customers, please come visit us. Right. We are the one thing we are absolutely sure of is you will have a great experience.
Yes.
In our stores, whether you buy something or not, you will enjoy it. So please come in.
I will agree with that wholeheartedly. And as I said, this brand is all about joy. And for those who have not been in a Jamie McLaughlin store, you will be surprised because you will be driving around a corner in any local town and there you will see a store, which is a pleasure. And I just, again, it's been great spending time with the two of you. I'm a huge fan and I'm really grateful to share your story with our listeners. So thank you.
Thanks, Kate.
Thanks so much, appreciate Kate. We appreciate it.
Of course.
Great to see you.
Great to see you as well.
If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the Safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.